Our final case of the day is CERTCO against the Teamsters Union.
It's hard to see those time signs.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm noting down and looking on the screen to see when things start. That's why Diane didn't want to start it too.
Yeah, sorry.
Mr. Zak.
May it please the court and good afternoon. The issue that is before you today is whether an arbitration award can compel non-union employees in a separate employer facility to become unionized.
I don't see that at all as the issue in this case, because it seems to me that in work assignment disputes, the question is what work is going to be given to a given set of employees, in this case, the people employed at the Verona Road facility. I didn't see anything in this saying, and by the way, add new people to the bargaining unit. That was what was rejected by the board.
Well, the practical effect of this award is going to be that all of the employees at the non-union facility are going to become union employees.
Why? What the award says is the work has to be performed by the people at the Verona Road facility.
Okay.
Under the award, there won't even be a new facility, not unless you reach a separate agreement with the union.
Well, the practical impact is there's a brand new freezer space and no longer any freezer space at the Verona Road facility.
That is an argument you might have made to the arbitrator about why the new facility was consistent with the collective bargaining agreement. We're not going to get anywhere in this appeal unless we agree that what the arbitrator did was say what work the contract assigns to the people at Verona. It is not an issue. The arbitrator's award does not concern accretions to the bargaining unit or who belongs to what union. It's just not in the award.
Okay, but the award does impact the Femrite facility and the Daniels facility.
Only in the sense that, you know, for all I know, it may be okay for Verona people to drive over there. It's not like it's off in San Francisco. It's, you know, in the area. I'm looking at the award, and it says the company is ordered to return all work on the transferred freezer products to the bargaining unit employees, not a bigger group of employees, no accretion, as the chief judge said. And it's your problem to figure out how to make that happen, whether it happens by putting freezer capability back at Verona Road or whether it happens by telling the bargaining unit people to drive a little bit to work or whatever.
Or just closing Femrite Drive.
Yeah, or closing Femrite Drive and doing something. But there's not a single extra person who's going to be in the bargaining unit as a result of this award, because you won on the accretion cases. And the Supreme Court has always drawn a distinction between representation matters, which are for the board, and interpretations of the collective bargaining agreement, which are for the arbitrator.
I think it is representational.
It is not.
And you just ought to take the court's word for it, that this argument is going nowhere unless you understand that the award is not about the scope of the bargaining unit or who represents whom.
Okay. Well, we have competing decisions, one from the National Labor Relations
Board. Oh, that's another question. Where is the decision by the National Labor Relations Board?
The decision for the National Labor Relations Board is twofold. One, it is the letter and the decision from the regional director on appeal to the legal counsel for the National Labor Relations Board, in which the National Labor Relations Board in 2010
No. You keep saying the National Labor Relations Board did something. In 2010, the National Labor Relations Board did nothing. The National Labor Relations Board acts only when a complaint is issued by the General Counsel. And what happened in 2010 is that the General Counsel declined to issue a complaint. The upshot of that was the National Labor Relations Board did nothing in 2010. And there's zero legal or precedential effect of a decision by the General Counsel not to issue a complaint. That rule of labor law is so fundamental that I am just bowled over that both sides have briefed this case as if the Labor Board made a decision in 2010. There was never anything presented to the Labor Board, and it made no decision.
Judge, in the case of Yellow Freight, this court held that an arbitration decision or a grievance was not arbitrable based upon a regional director's decision similar to this. And the other cases that we cite have similar bases that the...
I'm going to look at that, but regional directors do not speak for the board,
okay.
Nor does the general counsel.
Well, that is what was held specifically in Yellow Freight.
Yellow Freight was not holding anything about the general counsel's power. Yellow Freight was characterizing a type of dispute, and some disputes arise under collective bargaining agreements, and others may not. But I think you're reading much more into Yellow Freight than is there. And believe me, if this court has made a gaffe of the size that you are implying that we did in Yellow Freight, we will not continue it.
Right. It'll be overruled pretty quick.
Okay. The second point I have on the issue of the regional director's decision that was discussed by general counsel is that argument has never been issued or addressed by this court. We believe that the union has waived that issue. My third point on that argument is that by its decision, by its letter, the regional counsel, in similar circumstances in 2010, harkened back and bootstrapped in the 26th decision of the National Labor Relations Board, because we're dealing with the same facility and the same situation in which...
If there was a real decision by the board in 2006, and that what the general counsel said in 2010 is that considerations similar to those that the board expressed in 2006 lead me not to even issue a complaint here. But that just left no decision by the board, one way or the other, about the Femlife Drive facility.
And the reason why the regional director or in the council did that was because we were in the same exact setting as we were in 24, in which we open up a brand-new facility.
And you know, my feeling about all this is kind of, so what? I mean, you have opened up new facilities. Let's assume, how many people are at Verona Road?
There's roughly, in the bargaining unit right now, there's roughly 150.
150 or so. And how many people are at Femrite?
In terms of the freezer, approximately 25 to 30.
Okay, so it's very simple. If this were about representation and accretion, you'd be talking about a new bargaining unit that included, or, you know, an expanded bargaining unit that included 175 people. It's the same... Putting to one side whether you have to go back to when you started siphoning the work away, it's the same people at Verona. The question is, what are they doing with their time? Are you giving bargaining unit work to members of the bargaining unit? That's a CBA issue. It's an issue that the Supreme Court says is appropriately given to arbitrators. This arbitrator decided that... you had, in fact, assigned work to non-bargaining unit people that shouldn't have been assigned to them, and it said, give them their work back. No new people. Not representational. Nobody's running an election. Not Section 7.
The practical impact of the warden is that those 25 people would become union employees.
If you decide to ask them, you know, if you want the board to run an election, nobody prevents you from doing that. But I don't at all see that this is anything that the arbitrator told you to do. The arbitrator uses the word return all work on the transferred freezer products to the bargaining unit employees. The arbitrator doesn't say expand the bargaining unit. Nothing.
Well, in effect, it is going to expand the bargaining unit because you've got a facility that's a standalone freezer and no freezer at Verona Road.
Are there no laid off?
Pardon?
Are there no laid off Teamsters that could be called up to do those jobs?
No, there are not.
Okay.
We have not laid off anybody, and the freezer employees that were at Verona Road are still there.
It sounds like you're out of compliance with the award and facing sanctions. I don't see why that's a basis for asking for any relief here.
I'm not challenging
the award said return all the work to the people at Verona Road, and you just said, well, we haven't done that.
Because I view it, and Circle views this, as representational as required.
It's fine. You ask the district court to set the award aside, and the district court refuses, and you still have failed to comply with the award. Well, you know, I expect you'll be facing consequences.
Well, we addressed that issue. We believe that the line of cases from Yellow Freight and the three others that we cited involve this specific situation.
But the district court didn't agree with you, and you might be getting a sense that maybe some of us have a problem. I mean, sort of stubbornly clinging to your view of this when the arbitrator, the district court, don't adopt that view. They say, no, this isn't representational. Nobody's asking you to organize any of your other facilities, and they're as the arbitrator and others have mentioned, there are a number of ways you could comply. I guess you're not trying any of them, but it's...
Because our view is that the comply is to create those...
Look, when a lawyer stands up and says, in our view, the arbitrator and the district judge are wrong, and therefore we are defying the orders, you have to understand that that doesn't go over very well. That's not what we expect from a member of the bar.
We were addressing a legal argument based upon Yellow Freight and the distinction that was created in that with respect to NLRB decisions.
And there is a distinction if it's representational, but you seem to have forgotten that the Supreme Court in 1991 decided the Litton Financial Printing Division case in which it says... When it comes to interpreting collective bargaining agreements, I'm quoting, the board is neither the sole nor the primary source of authority in such matters. Arbitrators and courts are still the principal sources of authority. And they go on to say we don't defer to the board in its interpretation of the contract. Where the board is the primary authority is in representational matters. You're forgetting that this line of cases is there. This is not a carry case. This is not a case about representation.
We are not challenging the arbitrator's award with respect to her interpretation that it applies to Verona Road. We disagreed with that, but we're not making that factual argument.
I don't know what you're doing then, because you've been ordered to return all work on the transferred freezer products to the bargaining unit employees, as well as work on products that were stored at Verona Road as of July 27, 2009. So if you're not challenging that, then why are you here?
I'm challenging that because the return to the work means that those employees at Femrite who the NLRB said are not covered by the Verona Road contract will become union employees.
When did they become bargaining unit employees?
They will be as to return the work back to the collective bargaining agreement at Verona Road means that work at Femrite Freezer will have to become unionized.
No, it'll go back and be done at Verona Road.
It can't be, Your Honor, because there's no freezer there.
I must say, I have rarely seen an argument as obtuse as this. I hope you've got a large fund set up for 4 years of back pay to the people at Verona Road, because that's what's staring you in the face.
I am out of time, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Zak. Mr. McCoy.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to first tackle the layoff issue. The arbitrator actually did find that the unit was 14 members down total. And that's why she differentiated between a subcontracting claim, which would be a supplement to the unit, and here where it was indeed supplanting the unit. So the union was down in numbers as well as in work.
So there are laborers to be called up?
I don't know if they're currently still on layoff because you can see so much time has expired. But and regarding the Yellow Freight case, which I suppose forms the crux of their argument, if only Judge Coffey were here to read his case to us where he says the IAM took the position that because the existing contract required the company to apply the contract to newly acquired facilities, the company was thus forced to apply the IAM contract. And we didn't ask for any of that. And that was the reason that Judge Coffey said the decision by the board's director dispensed with the IAM's grievance. And indeed, the timeliness, which became an issue earlier in oral argument, was the grievance of the IAM was actually retrospective. So there was already an election conducted, and the IAM became the representative. So whether or not there was a final board award on the issue was really irrelevant. Now, considering CERCLO's claim that it can only automatically accrete the employees by complying with the award, it's just a false premise. And first, it requires that the court rely upon one long chain of likely false assumptions. First, CERCLO would have to keep all the work at those locations. Second, CERCLO would have to post the jobs for bid according to the current collective bargaining agreement. And every unit member from Verona Road would have to say, no, I want to keep my current job. And third, CERCLO would have to hire back every single position currently staffed in non-union plants to those positions. Well, that, of course, requires assumptions that are going to be false. But first, CERCLO may make a business decision to move some or all of it back to Verona Road or elsewhere. Second, Local 695's members may, in fact, decide to bid the other locations unit work because in order to do this, they're going to have to comply with the seniority article of the contract.
So the distances are not that far, are they? 10 miles or so?
10 miles is the maximum distance, and that's a fact in the arbitration award. And, in fact, the new positions may have better hours, and indeed the contract provides for a premium pay for freezer work that the employees now lose out on because the premium pay for cooler work, I believe, is 30 cents an hour, while freezer work is 50 cents an hour. And plenty of union members have spent years in those freezers and are willing to do that in order to garner that extra pay. Another assumption that's likely to prove false is that CERCLO will hire back every same individual from its non-unit facility into the unit to do the same jobs. And likewise, those same employees are very likely not going to be able to apply for those jobs because some of the unit members who have more seniority under the bargaining agreement are going to choose them. So even if it all somehow came true, it would still not be an automatic accretion and would not usurp the board's denial of automatic representation.
Who does the work at the Verona facility that the employees who transfer to FemRight?
Come again?
Who is left at Verona to do the work that's there if some of those employees transfer to FemRight because that's a better job?
The bargaining unit members. Then they can certainly hire more people into the bargaining unit.
So it's a net increase in the bargaining unit.
It may be, yes. And again, it's...
As a legal and practical matter.
Quite, and we are happy that it is. We're happy that CERCLO has no work.
So is there an element in this award that takes the number of people in the bargaining unit or the positions covered as of July 27, 2009, obviously slipping back in time from us? So these people who were lost, you know, would be restored? Or?
Right. I think the maybe all of the people who were lost, it was either attritions or valid terminations under the bargaining agreement if they had just cause for the termination. So what the company did was they
just didn't fill positions, yeah.
Right. Now, in addition, if CERCLO simply made the non-union employees part of the 695 bargaining unit without going through those steps I outlined before, they'd get another grievance, right, because they wouldn't have complied with the contract seniority and bidding provisions. So they can't do that. One, they can't under the contract do what they say the arbitrator says they must do.
Right, but the function of the arbitrator's award is effectively to say that these jobs belong to the Teamsters.
So, yes,
and
the work belongs to the
jobs
Teamsters.
Can't without great physical reconfiguration of this company be moved back. They're going to stay at Femrite, as the whole place has been remodeled. Both places have been remodeled to separate out the cooler and dry goods work from the freezer work. And so, you know, by effectively saying these jobs belong to the union, the arbitrator has effectively accreted those jobs to the union.
I don't believe she's effectively accreted them, because as I outlined before, there are a number of contractual steps you'd have to go through. And then the second part...
But you can see that at least some of them would be. There will be some transfers. Employees from Verona Road will want to transfer to Femrite. And so those positions at Verona Road will be vacant, but that's union work, and so that's got to be filled by union members.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a functional accretion.
Yes, in the
I think that's what the argument is of your opponent here, is that this is a functional accretion.
Right, and I suppose it would be akin to an argument that when a supervisor does work, like in the operating engineer's case, and the union files a grievance and says, no, that's unit work, then the employer would say, well, you want to make them a union member. No, we don't. That person has a Section 7 right that the board has jurisdiction over,
right.
But the work doesn't. The work falls under the agreement.
Right, so that's our job. That job belongs to us. That's
right.
A union job.
Yes, it is.
Effectively increases the union's numbers.
But by only the amount that would have been, you know, those jobs are the jobs that went to the bargaining unit employees at Verona. That's the point of reference. It's not double, triple, five times the number of jobs. It's not however many people you can do.
No, not a giant increase.
So it's return the work from the transferred freezer products. So you'd have to see what was that work.
Correct.
And maybe hire new people or provide an opportunity for somebody who's a non-union person to be hired at Verona. I mean, however it needs to be done, needs to be done.
Sure, yes. As the arbitrator found, Article 12 says that certain work belongs to the unit. And if that work is across the street or down the road, a unit member gets to do that work. If they add additional work that hasn't been historically part of the bargaining unit work.
But all the work at Verona is bargaining unit work. You can't subtract. I mean, the company can't subtract anything from that, right?
Right, since 1962.
Right. So the company gets a big new contract to supply, I can't remember what, but one of the big box stores, right?
Woodman's,
there we go.
Right.
So they get a big new contract. They got to expand. They build a new warehouse. They design it to hold all the freezer work of the company, and they make it non-union. And then there's the dispute that's raised at the NLRB, which was decided without a decision, as we've already talked about, just no prosecution decision based on the earlier NLRB decision that this isn't these jobs, the new jobs at the Femrite facility are non-union. They don't accrete to the bargaining unit. The arbitrator's award functionally achieves the result that you wanted with your complaint at the NLRB that was decided without a prosecution. I mean, the general counsel's office said we're not even filing a complaint here because the earlier decision by the board in 2006 covers this, the non-accretion decision. So you've achieved through the arbitration the result that you wanted in the complaint before the NLRB that was not prosecuted. How is that not a conflict?
The result only occurs because of CERCLO's breach of the agreement.
And I thought there was an exception anyway within work preservation disputes. If the bargaining unit is incapable of performing the work, mm-hmm. then the employer is allowed to go outside. So if there is this great expansion, then it seems to me that extension, that exception would be triggered because the bargaining unit as it existed in 2009 at Verona is going to have some outer limit on its ability to do the work. And if the company can say, you know, we used to have work for 150 people, but now we have work for 200, they would be entitled to have somebody else do the other 50 man person jobs, you know, person jobs.
Yes, correct.
So it doesn't mean that there's just automatically a change in the representation union.
No, and based on the hypothetical, the arbitrator separated the two, and she said that Here, CERCO did not supplement the unit through its ability to subcontract under Article 14, but instead, the unit is down 12 people, and the unit is down a significant amount of overtime work, and as a result of that, they are supplanting the union.
Right, and right, that's what my question is about, was whether there was anybody to be called up went to that point. And there are some, anyway, some people to be called up.
After 3.5 years, I really hope they found other work. Their benefits have run out. So now I'd like to turn to our cross-appeal regarding sanctions in this matter. There are currently two bases for sanctions here. First is the denied bases by the district court. And we believe the CERCO's challenge here is really just to claim that the arbitrator was wrong on the merits, because the arbitrability claim they make is premised upon facts that are just not in the record. And so, as this court said in the Kuna Mutual Insurance case, you can't just dress up an argument in arbitrability and expect to avoid sanctions. And CERCO has said, well, we have facts on the record here, like one, the grievance requested representation. Not true. Two, they say the arbitrator awarded representation. Not true. And so we believe that that first basis in the district court should have been garnering of sanctions.
There's some legal support for the argument that's being made in the Yellow Freight case.
Do I believe that the Yellow Freight case supports the argument? I do not.
Well, I know that you've distinguished it, as did the district court, but it at least is arguable support for the claim, which goes to the issue of whether the complaint was sanctionable.
I believe there would be arguable support for it had there been any mention of a representational effect by either the grievance or the arbitration.
So your argument is fact-based, not legal?
Our argument is that their legal argument has no basis. Essentially, what our argument is if they're allowed to avoid sanctions by putting forth an argument that's frivolous, an arbitrability argument, to cover up the frivolousness of their underlying claim, then, in fact, it's an illogical result because it allows a party that should be paying sanctions to avoid it by simply doing more frivolous conduct. So the second basis for sanctions here is that CERCO continues before this court to misrepresent the grievance and the earlier adjudicator's decisions. Nowhere in our grievance do we ask to represent any current employees at the Femrite or Daniels facilities or any of the non-union employees whatsoever. And nowhere in the opinions of Arbitrator Mawinney, nor in the opinion of Chief Judge Connolly, does either adjudicator award us any such representation.
So you're asking to restore the status quo ante, not to expand the status quo ante.
We're just asking for the result that the arbitrator gave us.
Right.
Just give us our
restoration, not expansion.
Right. We sought expansion before the board.
Right.
We wanted the
and
board
lost.
To accrete
yeah.
all those employees to us, but we didn't get it.
And the related work. So the thing is that there's a natural cap on what the bargaining unit as it was capable of doing, you know, the work that they were able to do.
Yes, and the parties recognize that in the collective bargaining agreement by including therein a subcontracting clause.
Mm-hmm.
So CERCO's continued distortions before this court, we believe, deserve sanctioning, and also raise an important question, which is, why would they do this? Well, as determined by the arbitrator, CERCO is attempting to reduce the union workforce and possibly, quote, eliminate the entire bargaining unit. By withholding from the unit any remedy to this grievance through frivolous appeals, CERCO undermines the union and effectively proclaims that Local 695
you think
is
CERCO is going to bankrupt the Teamsters Union by this litigation? That seems extreme.
No, I mean that they're going to eliminate the union
You're thinking
just
by attrition this one facility, right? And that could all be, that's the only thing it could mean.
Seems more likely to bankrupt CERCO.
Well, what I mean is that essentially CERCO is saying to its employees, union and non-union, that look, the union is a paper tiger. Even if they win a grievance, they take it to arbitration, they can't get you a result, and now you've run out of benefits. Good luck. And that's what the employees have been left with up until today. In the Driesen-Crump manufacturing case, this court noted that a 3.5-year delay between a grievance and an opinion constituted something profoundly wrong, because labor arbitration is supposed to be speedy and efficacious. Well, it's been nearly 3.5 years from the filing of these grievances in this matter, too, and we're only at oral arguments. So we believe that CERCO has spun out the arbitral process with meritless suits and appeals, and would also cite to this court's very recent holding in the Johnson Controls case. In that case, this court found that Johnson Controls, who was also seeking to vacate an award, had two incurable shortcomings. First, the argument was factually wrong. The argument assumed that the arbitrator granted one party standing to assert a third party's claims, though the arbitrator had, in fact, explicitly refused to do so.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Zak, I think you have 1 minute left. All right. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Now, before we leave at the moment, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to go and deliberate about these cases, but the three members of the panel will be back so that those of you who have some questions about the process or about the way the court operates, we will be happy to answer your questions. But that will take a little while till we've had a chance to talk a little about these three cases. So the court is in recess, but the judges will be back.